Warning, this podcast contains spoilers for the final season of Game of Thrones. You have been warned. Hello and welcome to Mike's Camera Action. I am your host, Carl Pontisso, and I am joined by my trusted hand, Jackson.
Hi, Carl.
And the usurper, Jared.
Hello.
How are you guys?
Oh, I'm good now that I'm the hand and this is the usurper over here.
I'm very disappointed that you wouldn't even put your brother as first billing, but that's okay.
Listen, man, I'm playing by Stannis rules here, okay? Brothers are just a liability.
Brothers mean absolutely nothing.
Oh, you're the Renly.
I don't want to be the Renly.
You know what? It kind of makes sense when I think about it.
I'd rather be the Robert. At least Robert was correct.
But Aiden's the Robert now.
Bow your shits. I'd rather be Stannis, honestly, of all of them.
Okay, out of all of them, yeah, sure. Yeah. I'd rather be the one that got beheaded, but yeah, sure.
I mean, is that much better than being gored by a boar?
At least he was drunk at the time.
Or murdered by a shadow demon.
Yeah, the Baratheons really didn't get a good run at this, did they?
Okay, let's just get into the show.
Yeah,
so which family do we think got the, like, noble family, like, of the main ones, who do you think got the worst run of it?
Tyrells, they're gone.
You know what? Fair point. Rinsed. Yeah, Tyrells are gone.
Yeah.
Baratheon's pretty much gone, except for Gendry.
Yeah, but he's, like, the greatest.
I don't understand how Gendry is actually Lord of Storm's End, considering it was given to him by Daenerys. And
I get the
feel she was a queen for all of 10 seconds.
In all fairness, he was made Lord of Storm's End by the queen. Like, sure, by the queen who usurped the throne. And for a full 2 hours was the legitimate queen of Westeros,
no,
I guess.
She also had Storm's End when she gave it to him.
I was going to say,
did
it
she?
Is fair.
I wasn't sure.
She was there.
Okay, just because, she wasn't at Storm's End. She's been at Dragonstone.
Yeah, oh, yeah, she's been at Dragonstone.
Is
I thought
Storm's
she was
End near Dragonstone?
It's in the same region.
Yeah.
Okay, so she probably
Storm's
would have
End
had control
is pretty
close. Of the reach.
Who was at Storm's End throughout all that time?
No idea.
No one.
If I were to take a guess, I'd say the same thing. I'd say, like, the people who are ruling the Reach and who are ruling Storm's End at that point. Yeah, if I were to take a guess, I'd say it's probably the same way the Tyrells came into power, where they were just, like, working as handmaidens or whatever. Like, or not handmaidens, but, like, they were just caretakers of Highgarden, and then all the gardeners died. Like, the family that came before them was the gardeners, so then they just moved in.
Yeah.
And they just declared themselves the new lords. So
of the wealthiest kingdom in the
pretty
Seven
much.
Kingdoms, aside from maybe Casterly Rock, but...
Yep.
Yep. No, okay. Like,
even then, so the big kicker about Casterly Rock is it's not... It's the wealthiest in a way where it just has the most gold going through it at the start of the show, but that all dries up.
Oh, yeah. And well, considering there's never any... Tyrians. Never any Lannisters at Castle Rock, so it's never being ruled, really.
Yeah.
I don't even know who's ruling it now.
For a while, it was their uncle.
Yeah, it was their uncle.
And then he died.
Yeah.
Yep. After that, the Unsullied took it. After Jaime left it undefended. And then, as far as I know, it was probably just whoever Daenerys had stationed there.
Who was probably an irrelevant character.
Yeah, probably just like a division of 4 Unsullied who are just chilling out going, so when do you think the Dragon Queen's going to win, huh?
Yeah, still better than whoever's at Marine. I mean, they have no idea what's happening at the time. The Second Sons.
I'm just picturing Dario at the end of the show. Like, Daenerys has been stabbed and flown off with Drogon, and Dario's just sitting on the steps in Marine going, I wonder how Daenerys' war's going.
Yeah. No, that's fair. It's very, very cool.
He's sitting there in his new bachelor pad pyramid.
Yeah, I mean, he's got an entire city for himself, basically most of Essos.
Yeah, you know, he's doing well for himself. So yeah. He's on a similar degree to Bronn, where he's just a sellsword who then becomes like one of the most important lords of his land.
Okay, so I understand the whole Bronn being Lord of the Reach because you know Lannister pays his debts, and Tyrion did promise the Reach. Why did they have to make him Lord of Coin?
Because he's Lord of Coin purely because he's the wealthiest person in Westeros right now. And the only reason he's the reason he's the wealthiest person in Westeros is because the Reach has the best farmland in Westeros as a whole. It's also the only. It's also one of the few places in the on the continent that has functioning mines.
Yep. But you wouldn't make Jeff Bezos treasurer of the world. Like,
it's probably part of the condition of. It's probably just part of the condition of the fact that he owns one of the most important castles. Okay. He has all the money.
So
therefore,
we
need someone
to
just. Yeah, exactly. Yep. So he's going
to
be the person who has first say of where does my money go?
Because I was You know, you look at the small council meeting, and you've got. At the very end, and you've got Tyrion as Hand of the King, and
yep.
Samwell Tarly as Archmaester.
Bought his degree.
Yeah, dude. And, well, to be fair, Qyburn was also Archmaester. He was kicked out of the Citadel.
Yep. If anything, Sam is way better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Sam did save Jorah's life.
If they gave Qyburn 5 more years, we would have had a Westeros space program. So give him credit where credit's due.
We fly him back on the top of undead.
Yeah.
But you look at the small council meeting and you've got, you know, Sir Davos, Samwell Tarly, Tyrion, Brienne, all people who genuinely do care about the common people.
Yeah.
And then you've got Bronn.
Well, you need
who's the most selfish person in the Seven Kingdoms.
You need those perspectives. The old small council meeting had Lord Baelish on it.
Yeah.
So you got to have like that kind of cutthroat approach to it.
Also, just on the small council, I like how Bran says, oh, we don't have a Master of Whispers yet. Do you need a Master of Whispers when you are capable of seeing anything that happened in the past?
Just those people to catch the, like, few things you don't give a shit about. Oh. Like, oh, yeah, my lord, we found, I don't know, some orphan problem going on or whatever. Like, someone's got to keep, like, the orphan children in work.
Okay.
Because without Varys or Qyburn or anyone else, who's doing that?
Oh, also, didn't give it any thought.
Also, speaking of, I assume it's the same reason you keep the Night's Watch going, because you need a place to send all the bastards who no one wants anymore. Like, that's the only reason the Night's Watch existed at the start of the show, is just because it's not about watching out for the White Walkers. Hardly anyone believes they exist. It's more about just having somewhere to send all the criminals that you can't keep around.
So also wildling control.
Also wildlings.
Yeah. So the Night's Watch is a penal colony, is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So the Night's Watch is Australia.
Yes.
Okay.
It's way colder.
Yeah, it's just cold Australia.
That's fair. Heard it here. Night's Watch is cold Australia.
Yeah. Speaking of Sam buying his degree, one of the things about the Maesters is like the chain links to show how their proficiency in certain areas. Like each different chain of a different metal means they're proficient, like means they've graduated or like are skilled in a different task. So I don't remember what they all are. All I know is Valyrian steel means skilled in magic, but Sam had like one or two chains on it. Like he had legitimately just like two loops and then that's it. Whereas like. I think Pycelle had like just a whole ring of them.
Yeah.
You've got previous maesters at Old Town are just like covered in these chains, and he's just showing up like with this jeweler's chain and two links.
Well, what did Sam do while at the Citadel?
He read books and
read some books, wrote some stuff down, and changed chamber pots.
One of those is chamber pots, one of those is reading.
Yeah. I guess the iron links are chamber pot changing.
Chamber pot changing and transcribing,
yep.
I suppose. Two of those chains.
Very prestigious ranks in the Citadel to make him Archmaester.
Yep. Not the two best.
Right at the start, when we mentioned the houses that, you know, got it bad, I was thinking to myself, houses that actually got it pretty okay.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, House Arryn, though, is doing pretty good for themselves, and they have a lord now.
They did a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, they've got Robin, which, by the way, we haven't seen Robin in a while. He's looking pretty good.
He's been trained by, I can't remember his name, white hair, was sitting next to him.
Yeah, I think Vayne, maybe? Something like that.
I don't know. He's been grooming him for years now.
Yeah.
I bet you they've got an okay lord up there now. Like,
yeah,
they're doing well for themselves. They kind of just had their issues, disappeared, and then they've been ruling themselves.
Well, the Knights of the Vale only really appeared for the Battle of the Bastards, and that was it. So they wouldn't have lost many people.
Well the Arryns had a, like, they appeared quite a bit at the beginning of the show.
No, but what I'm saying is the last time we saw them would have been the Battle of the Bastards, and then they'd never really gone to any fights. They weren't at the Battle of Winterfell from what we could tell.
I thought they were at the Battle of... I thought they were composing the Northmen at the Battle of Winterfell.
Okay.
It's just
they didn't
show up with all their lances and horsemen.
So they didn't show up with their greatest assets.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, they let the Dothraki charge in. They went, well, maybe we shouldn't just let them eat our horses.
Not even half the Dothraki died by the looks of things, based on everything that happened in episode 5 and episode 6. There were a lot of Dothraki and a lot of Unsullied.
I think it's an untouched part of the show. A part of the book that we haven't touched on in the show is that people from the cultures from Essos are capable of breeding via mitosis.
Okay, yep.
They're able. Yeah, the Dothraki can go, well, we've lost half of the Dothraki.
Well,
and split.
How many unsullied did Daenerys get when she killed the Master of Astapor?
It was like 5,000.
It was a lot.
It was 10,000.
There was like a legion. There were just ranks upon ranks in that shot.
It wasn't 10,000.
I don't remember the exact number. Okay, I should go back and watch
Grey Worm does say, I believe, in the final episode when Sansa threatens him that there were tens of thousands of Northmen.
Yep.
I believe Grey Worm said that there were approximately 10,000 unsullied.
I think in that scene, I've seen it twice now. I think he said that there were 4,000 unsullied.
4,000. Okay. Yeah.
I think 4,000 was the number that was thrown out on both sides.
I reckon we saw more than 6,000 die just on screen based on everything that happened in Meereen to the final episode. But I suppose numbers don't really mean that much if they're not named characters.
Yeah.
They're statistics at that point.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
We lost half to the Night King. Hold on. Weren't you guys on the other side of the wall?
Yeah, you lost half, and yet we lost three main characters. Okay, sure. Just I think Daenerys' death was probably the biggest part of the episode.
Yeah.
Were you satisfied with that?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. It kind of came... So the best thing I can say about this show, this season, is that I'm okay with the point we got to. Like, I'm okay with all the endings. It's just how we got there. And so Daenerys came across as, like, a bit of a Roose Bolton play there, where they're just like...
We had to hate her because...
It's just Jon Snow and Daenerys kiss, and then snicked. And it's like, oh, who's been stabbed? Well, we know who's been stabbed. You're not going to do the double play on us here.
Oh, right, yes. Oh, man, I forget Roose and Ramsay Bolton, yeah.
Roose and Ramsay Bolton was freaking terrifying. Like, that was the moment where it's like, oh, what's happened here? Has he murdered his bastard child, or has his bastard child murdered him?
I think we all very well knew that Daenerys did not murder Jon.
No, exactly. Exactly. That's why it didn't have the same, like, impact.
Yep. That's fair. Well, we did then see Drogon just appear out of nowhere. He sensed it after having a sleep for all of 10 seconds.
Drogon emerges out of that snow like a Dark Souls boss, dude. He just, like, creeps out and the snow falls off him. It's a cool-looking shot.
Drogon has had two fantastic reveals in the last episode. In episode 5, when he appeared out of the darkness behind Daenerys, and in this episode where he rose out of the snow.
Yep.
I genuinely think the cinematographers have been phenomenal this season. What you will about the writing, but...
If nothing else, I think everyone is giving it their all in this season. Like, so many people, there's so many, like, jobs that go into a show this big. And I think for the most part, like, 98% of the crew is putting in everything and giving so much effort to it. Like, the animators are doing a great job. Like, the dragons and the massive fights all look incredible. The actors are doing amazingly with what they're given. The director's doing awesome. The cinematographers are looking great. The production design teams... all incredible stuff.
I've
listened to the same tracks from the Battle of Winterfell over and over and over.
I've listened to The Night King, which is the main track in episode three. And also I've been going back to The Light of the Seven.
Great soundtrack.
Two of my most favorite original songs in any show to date.
Yeah.
I've just been loving it.
And
I think the score's been absolutely beautiful.
I haven't seen it launched. Like, I need to, once they put it out on, like, Spotify, just in whole, I really want to listen to the soundtrack from episode 5, because it's got that blend of Reigns of Castamere with Light of the Seven, really cool.
Yep.
I thought the soundtrack was just crushing it this season.
No.
And one of the most incredible things is like you were saying, the cinematographer and the direction, because some of the most beautiful shots I have ever seen in my life are in this season. One, the Battle of Winterfell, when you've just got everyone fighting the army of the dead, and then these dragons swooping above, and there's some beautiful shots in there of just, like, Tormund in the foreground, like, white's just, like, strewn all over the place, And then just in the background, you've got this gout of fire coming down as these two dragons just come sweeping past their line. It's incredible.
Well, I think one of the best shots from episode 5 would have been the hound for the hound chasing off against the mountain and Drogon flying in the background. It's so amazing how the dragons seem to make fantastic background pieces.
They
seem to just be fantastic. If you put them in the background, it makes any shot just epic and amazing and fantastic.
Well, if I had a dragon, I would have it at least, 100 meters away from me flying in the background, just so you knew that I was this.
Yeah, and that shot you're talking about, there's so much conveyed in that one. It's amazing. Like, you've got Gregor Clegane and Sandor Clegane on this staircase, and of course, Sandor's looking up at Gregor. The castle's falling apart, so you can see a dragon breathing fire in the background. So suddenly Sandor's standing looking up at his two biggest fears in life. Mm. His older brother who scarred him for life and fire.
What scarred him for life?
Yeah, which is what did it.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Sandor just runs.
Yeah, I fucking would.
He's like, shit, I should have gone with Arya.
Yeah, I should have listened to my own advice. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, exactly. And also, another shot with Drogon, I think this episode, which was amazing, was when Daenerys was walking through and you just see the wings behind her.
I want that for my phone wallpaper, is just Daenerys with Drogon behind her creating these massive black wings behind her.
For a moment, beautiful. I thought it was a little bit on the nose, but then I was like, no, it's awesome.
It's gorgeous.
Get over it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great shot.
Yeah.
Also, credit to Emilia Clarke for being, for being able to give an incredible impassioned speech in a foreign made-up language.
Yep, that's
great job.
Full credit to her, and I think she nailed it.
Yeah. I just love that John's listening to it going, I have no idea what she's saying.
Winterfell.
Hang on, did she just say Winterfell? Hold on, surprise Pikachu.
Yeah, Tyrion just sees this Unsullied getting excited. We've got a problem here.
This doesn't look good.
No, that's fair. I think the main thing to take away from this episode would be Bran's ascension to the king.
Yes.
Expected? Happy? What are you...
Happy?
Like,
unexpected?
General?
Just like... when it first got announced, I sat there and they went, Bran, and I was like... And I had a feeling in my gut like, I don't like this. And then I sat there going... No, I'm starting to like this.
Yeah.
Because it just came out of nowhere for me.
Mm.
Which I feel like is a lot of what they were trying to do this season, try and come out of nowhere. Mm. But even then, I wasn't upset with this. In the end, it grew on me. I was like, oh, yeah, no, this isn't a terrible decision.
Yeah. I agree that, once again, good ending point. Like, I was like, yeah, Bran, why not? Like, that's fine. But the problem is getting there because we didn't get enough of... What the fuck does the three-eyed raven mean?
Yeah.
We didn't delve into that. We didn't have enough time with Bran. And to have things like Tyrion in episode two, go, hey, we need to have a conversation, Mr. Bran, and then they skip it. Yeah. That's stuff that really...
You wonder what they said.
Exactly.
Because that could have really helped Bran's character.
I think that if they'd actually played that out, that could have had way more justification for Tyrion's choice.
There's a theory that, Bran told Tyrion what was going to happen at King's Landing.
Okay.
But I don't see that being the case. If it was, there's no way Tyrion would have done what he did.
Yeah.
Also, Bran can't really see the future.
No,
he's more the past.
Yeah.
They do show in... So we don't really, show what Bran's powers are. We know he's a warg. That much we do know.
Yep.
We know that he's had some look into the, he's been able to look into the past with the Three-Eyed Raven in season 5. And he also had some potentially premonitions of the future at one point where they show there is a shot in there during the flash montage of, a dragon flying over, the shadow of a single dragon flying over King's Landing. Which we get in season 8, episode 5.
That could also be the past, though.
Which could also be any of the dragons of the past flying over King's Landing, which I doubt King's Landing's changed in so many years.
Not much, no.
No, just a whole lot more scorpions.
Yeah, because King's Landing's. Kyben's, I think King's Landing must be only 300 years old. Like, at least the. Because I can't remember. Did Aegon the Conqueror build King's Landing?
He
took it, so it was already there?
I'm pretty sure he took it.
Okay. He might have taken it, but then. Built upon it.
I wasn't sure if the Red Keep was something.
Well, the
built
Sept
by
of Baelor, they describe, obviously that wouldn't have been built before Aegon the Conqueror was there. So I imagine they would have built a lot of, and they would have probably got more people flocking to there.
Well,
you need
it,
to build
it wasn't
houses,
the center of it wasn't the center of power until Aegon showed up.
What was?
There wasn't one. That was that was the point. That was the point of Aegon the Conqueror. Okay. He united the seven kingdoms and
sense.
Turned it into one kingdom,
which,
of Westeros.
Now no longer seven kingdoms.
Six kingdoms. It was really jarring to hear Tyrion say, "Lord of the Six Kingdoms."
I half expected him to say seven and then stutter and say six.
seven. I mean six.
Yeah.
Nah, you,
Sansa would.
You gotta have the eloquence, you know.
It doesn't roll off the tongue as well, though. That's what annoys me.
Yeah,
like,
six kingdoms, seven kingdoms. It just has more like
two syllables.
It's got more dramatis to it, you know.
Two syllables, a little bit extra talking. You
just
know?
Add one more. We'll go like eight kingdoms. That sounds. You go up numbers. It sounds more grand. You sound better.
Why not get into the like that scene with Tyrion's speech? Everyone's like, "Yeah, Bran. I vote Bran." Then Sansa, who's last in the vote, says. You know, I love your brother, but...
I'm declaring independence.
Yeah, the North will stay independent, Winterfell forever.
If
and
she
then
was
the
first
yeah,
to
exactly.
say that, then there's no way Yara and the Prince of Dawn wouldn't have also declared their own independence.
I think there's a case to be made for both ways, where, like, the Ironborn, I could picture them going, nah, fuck that, we stay in independent. Mm. But I think there's a little bit of reliance on each other. Because once again, you've got that centralized power of you have the Lord of Coin from the Reach, so you've got money from the Reach going to Dawn, and you've got money from the Reach going to the Ironborn, so that you've so there's like the different kingdoms bring things to each other to help each other out. That's the point. It's the EU. It's the point. That's the point. They help each other out. Sure enough, there's give and take.
So the North is,
but the North
so
I think
the North
operates
is the UK. Is what
you're
saying.
It's Norxit.
And we've already established that the Night's Watch are Australia.
I'm noticing
a theme here.
John has a... makes sense.
Makes perfect sense.
But, crikey, mate. What's all these wildlings about?
Well, so you've got Bran leading the Six Kingdoms. You've got Sansa, now Queen of the North.
Yep.
Which... the North encompasses almost 50% of
North
the
is
land.
Huge.
Yeah, North is huge.
It's barren, though. Like, the entire population of the North fits inside of King's Landing.
Yes. And then you've got John, they clearly set up to be the new Manserator, essentially King Beyond the Wall.
Mm.
So you've got the entirety of Westeros and probably north of Westeros being conquered by Starks.
Yep, the Starks
on
the
world. Jon Snow, obviously... is a Snow and technically Targaryen, but his allegiance is with the Starks.
He's a Stark. Yeah. He's a Stark born.
Yes. And then you've got Arya Stark traveling west.
Yep.
Going to conquer whatever
Magellan, like Magellan.
Going to establish trade routes, whatever.
Yeah.
The Starks are now the most powerful people in the known world.
Give it 100 years or so, and then all of a sudden Bran won't have an heir, because apparently he can't.
Yep. Because Sansa just throws that out.
Arya's gone. Sansa will have her children. Maybe Jon might have some children up in the north. And then they're going to come back and screw it up.
It's going to be like Bronn says in that scene in Winterfell, just like, and all my grandkids can ruin it.
Yeah.
all you shitty little descendants can ruin all of the work I put in.
No, that's fair. I like the idea of, you know, when Bran would die, then vote on a new king.
Yeah.
But in reality, they'd do that once. It'd go to a new king who can have an heir, or a new queen who can have an heir, and then you'd just repeat the cycle. I think anything else would.
I get that, and I think there is a point to be made for history repeating itself.
Oh,
I think
absolutely.
I think it's inevitable in the world of Westeros that eventually you will have a king that tries to seize more power, and eventually, like, give it another 300 years. And eventually you will have another War of the Five Kings, and eventually the political landscape will change entirely.
Look at human history anyway. That's what it was like for thousands of years.
Exactly.
Ruler, fight, new ruler, keep fighting.
Exactly. Like, hell, I think there's a good possibility that it'll be like when Robert Baratheon ascended to the king, and in 5 years the Ironborn will rebel again. And it's just going to be a thing that happens. Occasionally you got to go around and beat the shit out of some pirates.
Were you guys half expecting... Samwell's proposition of democracy to actually go through? Or
it was really weird to have that, where he's having this huge speech and he's like, well, everyone should have a say. I think if we're going to rule everyone, then everyone should pick. And I'm like, and part of me was sitting there like, you know what? That doesn't sound terrible. But the other part of me was like, dude, don't try and democratize don't try and put a democracy in Westeros. That's ridiculous. And then everyone just laughs at
him. Oh, they absolutely shit on him.
Yeah, just...
My horse should have a vote too.
How about we let the dogs have a vote?
Dude, Edmure and Royce have the fucking, like, rip the shit out of him there. They're just like, how about we give the dogs a vote? I'll ask my horse.
Edmure can't talk. I'm sorry. I feel so completely bad. What do you mean you feel bad?
He's the most senior person in that room, except for maybe Lord Arryn's advisor, Royce.
Equerry.
Yeah, Equerry would be a good term for it. Yep. He is the most senior person there, despite having spent the War of the Five Kings mostly imprisoned.
Yeah, but that's my argument. He wasn't invested in the big story.
But he's still...
You'd have to give it to someone who was a leader at the Battle of Winterfell or at King's Landing. It doesn't... It wouldn't seem right to give it to someone like Edmure because he wasn't there for it. Just like, I was really annoyed when Yara was like... Mm-hmm. Oh, our queen was Queen Daenerys. You didn't help. You didn't help.
In all fairness, you didn't do anything. She contributed very little to that, where she sets Theon... she gets set free by Theon. Mm. Then, instead of helping out with the Iron Fleet, she turns tail, goes to the now empty Iron Islands that are undefended by Euron Greyjoy and the Iron Fleet, and then just conquers them.
Presumably by
just sailing up to the coast and walking in and sitting down.
She brought Daenerys and her army to Westeros, which for that, you've done a great job.
Big deal.
But then in her first real battle, when Euron pops up out of nowhere, she gets annihilated, then captured, then does nothing. The Ironborn didn't really do anything in this show, aside from maybe Theon.
Well,
and that's because he was a character that went from episode one to Season 8, Episode 3.
Once again, early on, we had a lot of stuff with the Ironborn. Like, the Ironborn conquered Winterfell. That is something that happened.
Ironborn.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But he was also... Was he joined by Northmen for that, or was he with other Ironborn?
He had his little thingy fleet.
Ironborn. Yeah, about 20 other Ironborn. But bear in mind, they conquered Winterfell when there was no one there.
Yeah, but I'm still saying the Ironborn took Winterfell, and then sold him out.
That was Theon.
Yeah.
Theon was the only Ironborn, the only Greyjoy, that really had any sort of major impact. You'd say Euron did, but no one liked his character. I shouldn't say no one. I personally didn't like his character because he seemed to just pop up and piss you off.
Yeah. Jackson, what do you think about Euron?
Euron? No, he's not great. He's just... As Jared just said, he's just there to kind of piss you off.
Do you guys know anything about the Euron Greyjoy or Euron Crow's Eye in the book?
You mean Cthulhu Wizard?
Yeah.
You've told me about him, and he's phenomenal, and we would need another two seasons to really chuck stuff like that in.
And that's why we're fine. I see the point that they were getting to with some of the stuff Euron does in the show, but it's not the same at all as the Euron in the books, who Euron in the books is trying to become a god, raise a kraken... He's been to old Valyria and has a horn that can bind dragons.
He has a suit of Valyrian steel.
Yep. The only suit of Valyrian steel armor that exists.
I can't stress how much I think that would have been awesome.
How cool
like,
that
would have looked
been?
Like something out of Skyrim or something. Like,
how freaking cool could... Like, I just look at Euron when he shows up to the Kingsmoot, and I'm like, that's where we lost it. Because in the Kingsmoot at the book, he shows up with just chests of gold and giant rewards and says, hey, y'all motherfuckers, I'm gonna go marry a queen, and then, like, a dragon queen, like, his eyes are on Daenerys.
Yep.
And then he says, and we're gonna go conquer the fucking world, and we're gonna become the number one top dogs around here. And then he spends the show, like... You know, having a kind of crummy speech and goes, yeah, let's go kill my nephew and niece.
I suppose his biggest claim to fame would have been killing Rhaegal.
Yeah.
Which, while awesome, it ended up not meaning anything because Drogon ended up annihilating everyone. How much cooler would it have been
if Euron showed up with a horn that could bind dragons and killed
Rhaegal
with that?
No, controlled Rhaegal and then had Rhaegal and Drogon to fight.
Yeah.
That would have been something awesome. It would have also been a way too...
Way more powerful.
Well, what it would have done was what we saw with Rhaegal dying is the scorpions are something to be feared.
Yeah.
And they were a way of countering the dragons. And Daenerys just wrecks that shit in the next episode. Yep. But if you had a different way of killing Rhaegal...
Yeah, like a magical dragon killing weapon.
That would have been amazing. Apologies to anyone who's listening and hasn't gotten up to points like that in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Speaking of A Song of Ice and Fire...
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
My favorite historical book.
Good segue, Jared.
Which... I didn't hate that because when we got introduced
I've kind of expected that for a while, yes. Like that would happen. And it's been a fan theory for ages that like Sam would eventually write A Song of Ice
Which
and Fire.
I knew the moment that like Sam had that interaction with the Maester at the Citadel, I knew yeah. Sam wouldn't die. He was going to be the narrator of yep. the show, as it were. So that was my... That was really the only big theory I had that probably paid off for me.
I really did not like, though, that he came in with the Song of Ice and Fire book and went, "Oh, Tyrion, by the way, you're not in this."
Yeah, that I felt was kind of bullshit Tyrion's one of the most influential people in those events.
He was Hand of the King during the Battle at Blackwater.
Yeah, and he was the cause of the events at Battle of Blackwater. He's the one who destroyed Stannis' fleet with wildfire.
And he was the one accused of killing King Joffrey.
Yep.
How could you not include
Tyrion? And then
Tyrion?
On top of that, he did become Hand of the then Dragon Queen. He has a major character.
Tyrion is probably has more plot lines than anyone else.
Tyrion's one of the most politically influential characters in the events of it.
Yeah, because he wasn't on the battlefield, but he was...
I mean, he fought at the Battle of Blackwater.
He was at the Battle of the Blackwater, but bear in mind, even post the Battle of Blackwater, Tyrion wasn't hailed as a hero of it.
He wasn't.
They didn't advertise that he was the one that saved them.
But if you're telling the truth of the events,
no, but just
then
because
you would
hand,
tell it.
Just why wouldn't you mention that he was Hand of the King at that time? Why wouldn't you mention that he was Hand of Daenerys Targaryen?
And the person who suggested putting Bran as king. And there's so many events there that you're just like, well, how can you not include Tyrion Lannister? He killed Tywin Lannister.
I almost thought it was a joke to try to get him to not read it because in the actual books, A Song of Ice and Fire, Tyrion's described as basically being like looking like a monster.
Yeah.
Like he has, I think, a clawed hand and his eyes are different colored. And I thought that was their way of saying, oh, don't read it because he describes you that way. No, it was literally just because you're not in the books.
Oh, I don't think you feature in it. What?
Yeah. What? Like,
and even then, like in A Song of Ice and Fire, like in the books, he's a narrator. He's actually a person who gives you perspective in the book. So it seems really strange that that's an actual line they put in.
Yeah, I didn't like that line, but I get that it was just a way to chuck in another bit of humor at the very end of it. But I figured when you've got Bronn, Tyrion, and now Ser Davos in a room together, you're probably going to get that anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't need to chuck that in.
Yeah,
which I just would like to say that everyone arguing that their favorite characters died. Mine lived throughout the show. Mine was Ser Davos. He survived till the end. No one expected that. Not even me. So I'm happy with that.
I think I'm pretty half and half on my favorite characters living and dying.
Yours was Bronn, wasn't it?
No.
I thought you were a little
No, that's
Bronn.
Dead.
No, okay.
So Stannis died. So for me, Stannis died. He was one of my favorites. Yeah, all right. Well, listen, I liked him so much more at the beginning. John survived, Tyrion survived, Davos survived, Oberyn died, the Hound died. I think that does most of my main ones. I liked Beric towards the end.
When he was actually somewhat relevant.
Yeah, just when he actually showed up in the show and was like a featured character for more than one episode at a time.
Yeah.
And also because his voice is smooth as honey.
Oh, no, I will absolutely
agree. Easy choice with like my favorite characters dying. Mm-hmm. I was exactly half and half because my favorite were like Jon and Daenerys. I did not get a choice here. I was like, I'm going to lose one of you.
Yeah, I can't have you both.
I was going to say at the end of the last episode, you're like, oh no, it's going to be one or the other. I am so stunned that Grey Worm allowed for Jon and Tyrion to live.
Dude, the political manipulating there of just like, okay, well then choose a king and they'll decide what happens to him. Like, and then Tyrion goes, aha, let me choose a king who'll put me in power.
He's not the smartest character.
The entire thing was...
Grey Worm's not a politician.
That wasn't meant to be Tyrion's trial.
Yeah.
And then it turned into Tyrion deciding who would be king.
Yep, Tyrion deciding the fate of the realm.
Yeah, like, what did Grey Worm expect would happen? And then I get the feeling that they sort of... When they announced that Jon would go to the Night's Watch, I get the feeling that they sort of manipulated Grey Worm in the sense that Grey Worm probably didn't know what that
was. He probably thought it was probably a lot worse than it actually was. Well, and so they didn't realize that John could just get there and he left.
I think part of it, though, is once, like, that is true, that the way they probably pitched it to him is, well, he's going to be serving a life sentence away from the kingdoms of men.
Yeah,
like he's going to be in the Night's Watch. That's the end of him. That's where we send all the bastards and broken men.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, that probably went okay. Life sentence. He's never going to rule. Like, the whole point of the Night's Watch is he will never have a child. He'll never continue his name. Like, that's the end of the Targaryen dynasty right there.
Yep.
And he'll never rule a kingdom ever again. So the point for them is more getting him away from, like, basically sending him to a life sentence in prison, basically. And getting him away from ever trying to take the throne.
He did immediately go north, though.
Immediately. But that's fair, because the whole thing is they're just getting... Because him going north with the wildlings means he's never going to go to Westeros for the rest of his life. No one south of the wall, no named character aside from Tormund is ever going to see him again.
Yep. Ghost.
I mean, okay, no named human.
Okay. But in episode 4, when Tormund's about to leave, Tormund says, "Oh, I wish you were coming with me." John was like, "Oh, you know, I really wish I could do the same." Yeah. John always wanted that. John wanted
for years.
Leave.
John's wanted to become just go north and become a wildling. Whilst it just seems so much more up his like style of life.
Whilst it wasn't the circumstances that he wanted, i.e., being forced to after killing his queen.
Yeah.
He still got what he wanted in the end.
Yeah.
Which is in one sense makes me happy.
Yeah.
Because John deserved. That John deserved to be happy. I didn't want to see him.
He was always having so much of a better time north of the wall anyway. Like that's where he met Ygritte. That's where he like. I haven't seen John smile as much as when he was in those seasons north of the wall. You know.
Yeah. No. That's
like
very
even
fun.
Though it's awful out there, he's just having a much better time because every time he comes south. He's got to deal with people trying to make him king of the north. He's got to deal with people demanding things of him. He's got to deal with the people he trusts stabbing him in the heart.
Yeah. His squire stabbing him.
Yeah.
Turns out it just sucks being a politician in this era.
Exactly. So. Like, he just... That's the thing he wants the most, is just, I don't want any more kingdoms. I want to go to where there are none. Like, that seems to be the best thing for him.
The earlier we were talking about the humor during that trial and all that.
Yep.
I was making me think, you know, they had a lot of jokes and all that set up, but... I think my favorite little bit of humor that didn't really like kick off with any laughs was really just Davos going up to the Unsullied being like, "Oh, go start a lineage. None of them can breathe."
Yeah, none of them.
He's just like, go take the Reach, start your own noble house, and have the Unsullied as your bannerman. Not aware that in 60 years' time there will be no more bannerman unsullied. Or house.
Yeah, there will be no like, Unsullied at that point.
Here, take some land and live out the rest of your life.
You're all going to grow old.
Yeah, grow old with all of your people. You'll all eventually starve to death because you'll be too old to work the fields anymore. And then we'll come and conquer you again.
I'm glad Bronn wasn't at that trial because then he would be like, "Wait, why don't I get the Reach?"
Wait, why
is Davos offering that? That would have ended poorly.
I mean, at this point, no one but Tyrion would have known about that exchange.
But credit to Bronn for coming out the big winner. For the least amount of effort in the final season.
Turns out being an asshole works.
Yeah. Punching Tyrion in the face works.
Just break someone's nose or he didn't break his nose.
He didn't.
Threaten a motherfucker with the golden hand and they'll make you king.
Yeah.
You know? Like they'll make you the most powerful man. They'll make you the real most powerful man in Westeros.
It was a fantastic thing though. The whole Lannister does pay his debts.
Yeah.
Which I like that they kept that up. I suppose it is good that Bronn. Mm. Had Bronn survived, it does make sense that he would be king of the Reach.
I am glad that honestly, I am happy with Bronn's. Like the end point to Bronn's story, because it totally makes sense after all the like we meet him in the Vale as just like this shitty ass sellsword who helps Tyrion escape purely because he thinks he's going to get rich off it, and then he keeps showing up in King's Landing helping the Lannisters because they're paying him a whole bunch of money, and his whole goal is just if I keep killing people they'll
Give
keep
me
paying
castle.
Me yeah, and then eventually they offer him a castle, and then he comes out with the best castle.
Yep.
So credit to him for like I like that story that eventually it pays off for him and he doesn't have and he becomes the next like he becomes the next equivalent of the Lannisters where he's the wealthiest he's the new wealthiest house in Westeros.
He's the greatest chaotic neutral character in all of
yeah
this whole show.
That's a great way to put it.
That's fair. Sansa being Queen of the North, though,
yep,
I think is probably the storyline that they that most people would have expected.
Yeah.
That's the outcome that I think most people are going, like, I expected that.
I mean, it's been pretty easy to expect since, like, maybe season 4 onwards that eventually Sansa would become some sort of, like, would eventually become some ruling monarch. She'd eventually become, like, whether it's the Queen of Westeros or the Queen of the North or some sort of ruling lady, it's known that she would eventually get to that point. Like, she spends her whole childhood dreaming of becoming the Queen. You can only imagine that eventually she's going to attain that with all the work she puts in and just the way her youth goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do have to say, the MVP of Westeros, the best person there is whoever Sansa Stark's tailor is. Because Sansa's on screen in the past two seasons, I just sit there and go, that is the coolest fucking costume I've seen in my life. It is amazing.
I was watching it with Gemma and she immediately went, I want that.
Yep. I want it. That's so goddamn cool. It's just like, especially in this past season, like just that one outfit that's like the like torso made of just like interlocking plates. It's so cool.
I think the costume designers don't get enough credit.
They're so
because,
good.
Because everything Sansa's worn, Daenerys, Jon,
yep,
has all been so fantastic.
Mm.
And just exemplify the characters so much. And I think they're always so so amazing.
I am stunned by how the Starks especially, but mostly Jon Snow, can wear what they're wearing in King's Landing. King's Landing is described as being hot as hell.
It's also snowing.
Yeah, but still, like, he shows up and everyone's like in whatever, but he comes out in like this full black with this fur pelt draped over his chest and this cloak down to his ankles.
That's why Stark men don't do well in the South, because they all have heat stroke.
They're all cooking the whole time.
Also, was that snow or ash?
I imagine...
There was too much
to not be snow, and it was too
white.
I
imagine it could be a bit of both.
There wasn't enough grey for it to be true. Ash.
The thing is, it wasn't really coming from the sky. It was the fact that the wind was blowing, and you kind of see it coming on an angle.
Okay,
true.
That makes more
sense.
This
is ash.
Because I was going to bring up, I was confused how it got to snowing in the space of probably a few hours.
Yeah.
And that much snow. But ash makes more sense.
Fair.
So that's fair.
There would be a lot from that previous battle.
It's even hotter now.
Genocide. Massacre.
Just going back to a bit earlier in the episode,
yep.
Do you think Cersei and Jaime weren't buried by enough?
Like you mean how if they took like they 20, if they stepped 20 feet over that way, they would have been fine?
That too, but more so that there was only really two layers of rocks. And yes, that is enough to kill a man from it falling that high and if it hits your head.
Mm.
But it seemed like the entire thing collapsed in on itself.
Yeah.
I understand that it was pretty easy for Tyrion to find Jaime because he knew where they were going, and it's pretty easy to see a golden hand sticking out. But it seemed so... They just seemed so, like... It didn't seem like it was a significant enough destruction.
You see, like, barrier rescues and stuff like that. If you pull off, like, a couple rocks off someone, usually you can revive them. It's only been a couple hours.
Mm.
So I agree. That wasn't enough to kill him.
Entire room flooded, and then Tyrion spending hours just trying to dig through.
I think there's an argument to be made that could be another thing of like George R. R. Martin giving them the dot points. Like, here's what happens: like Jaime and Cersei buried in rubble under the Red Keep. Tyrion finds them later, and like that kind of situation. And then they just kind of go, okay, well, how can we make this happen?
Yeah. I thought a much better way for him to do that would be if, you know, he went up to like a giant wall of rubble, goes digging, and then eventually just pulls like the golden hand off.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's like holding the hand. He's like, oh no, I found them.
Yeah.
And couldn't find the body.
Yeah.
That would
instead
have been way
worse. Digs out their entire...
I was half expecting him to go down there and just see, like, walk in, see a pile of rubble, and there's just, like, a hand holding a wine glass, like, poking up out of the rubble.
He just
like,
takes the wine glass.
Just Cersei's arm just poking up out of the top, like, how will I find them? There we go. Who else would?
I mean, I predicted that Tyrion wouldn't be able to get into the rubble, and then he'd end up going around seeing that the boat was still there and assume that they got crushed.
Yeah.
I don't hate that they did show that there was bodies
because
you would have had people going like, oh, maybe they lived.
Yeah.
No.
I was talking to my mum just like before she saw the episode last night, and she told me like, oh, I still think Cersei and Jaime might still be alive, and I just thought like, oh, I'm so sorry.
You poor summer child.
you poor innocent soul.
You haven't been watching the last eight seasons.
You've been keeping up. Well, that said, maybe she's just been focusing on the last season.
Last two seasons, yeah. Considering I'm in the first few seasons where the whole, you know, rejecting the ideas of what most
of fairy tales.
Of fairy tales. Yeah. Yeah, like if you think someone's dead, they are.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, they might have survived. No, they are dead.
Yeah.
Then they sort of shifted away. And that,
well, the only real bait and switch we've had was, it took over a season to play out, and that's the Hound, where it's like, okay, he's probably dead, we can assume that, and then he came back, he proved he was alive.
That was the really biggest.
Dead, like, he was just kind of sitting there with broken legs. Yeah. Some random guy would have was like, oh, hello.
Yeah.
That like, was the biggest weight between reveals, but then you've got in episodes one, such as when in the second last episode of season 7, when John gets dragged under the water, whilst you know that that's probably not the end, had Game of Thrones stuck to its original template, that probably would have.
Yeah.
That being said, though, if they were sticking to that original template, they never would have put John in that situation in the first place.
That's fair.
Speaking of fairy tales, stuff like that, they were literally reviving people, though, at some points.
Yeah.
And I look back on that now and go, maybe that wasn't the greatest thing to add to the show.
What, to have people come back
being
from the
able
death.
To resurrect some people, because it does make really touch the fairy tale aspect that it does, shouldn't
but
be there.
That's part of Game of Thrones, is that it's like this. There's this real worldness to it where you've got like, oh, you fucked up. Well, I guess you're dead. Like a whole bunch of characters early on in the show just have like minor slip ups, and they just fucking die, and the show moves on without them. So I think there is that realism to it, but at the same time, this is a world that George R. R. Martin created to have magic in it. And there is that mysticism there of like that question of, are there gods and do they have say in the world? And that's the thing about Beric Dondarrion and Thoros of Myr, is that these two have this magical connection where Thoros keeps bringing Beric Dondarrion back from the dead like well over 40 times by the end of it. So you can see there's that underlying sense of magic there. And those times that it does come up, like magic is very rare. But when it does come up in Westeros, and not like within the Children of the Forest or the Three-Eyed Raven, it's very situational. Like the only time Melisandre ever does something supremely magical is one time with Stannis to
Renly.
Yeah, to kill Renly. Speaks about being able to have premonitions if she has the blood of a king, and then she brings back Jon Snow in a very intense time.
Yeah,
I really didn't like with the whole bringing people back to life, they were always like, bring you back to life for some greater purpose, and I feel like that railroaded them into what happened in the end. Like they have to utilize these characters in some great way, and I don't think they've hit that mark.
Yeah, there is the argument to be made of like, if you have a narrative like that, like this character can come back from the dead, then you can't have that character then just not do anything with that. Like you do have to have that character serve a greater purpose.
Yeah, well, the entire like thing was you could only be brought back by the Lord of Light if the Lord of Light had a purpose for you.
Yeah.
Beric's purpose, it turned out, was to save Arya's life. What was Jon's ultimate purpose? Was it to kill Daenerys, or was it to rally the armies against the Night King?
I think
those are my two things.
I imagine which armies.
I would imagine Jon's would be much more towards, because Melisandre dies after Winterfell,
so I'm pretty sure
the Lord of Light's goal for Jon was just get him to Winterfell, get him to like bring everyone to Winterfell in order to save the world from the Night King.
Yep. So Jon's ultimate purpose was to bring the armies together to band against the Night King, and then from there he had no predetermined fate, basically, according to the gods.
I think so. And okay. I think episode 4 onwards, taking away his dragon is part of that.
Oh, right, yeah.
Just because at that point he has no, there's no mysticism, there's no magic, there's no greater, there's no magic left with Jon. Like, he's got no one that can bring him back at this point. He's just a guy. He's just the guy leading the North armies.
Arguments are to be made that Rhaegal's death was kind of cool, and it was very, very cinematic, but you had two dragons die. Neither of them died in spectacular ways. Like, the Viserion died the first time by getting speared and then crushing once. That was okay.
But Viserion,
that was pretty cool,
though. Viserion
that
was like,
that was cool.
Viserion might be the one creature I think the Night King, like, what, aside from, so Viserion and Theon, I think, are the only two creatures that that the Night King ever personally kills.
Yep. Yep.
Which is a big deal. So yes. I can see losing a dragon to the Night King himself, that's fine.
But then you had Viserion undead version just got wiped out like the rest of the
Whites. Because really, well, that's the thing. I don't think the North had any way to kill him.
Valyrian steel scorpions.
No, that would be a hell of a thing. Just giant ballista with Valyrian steel. Yeah,
that would have been awesome.
The thing with going back to like Viserion getting killed by the Night King, though, you got to think, though, the Night King did throw a spear into the air and targeted him, like got him, and was like, okay, that's pretty cool.
He's an Olympic javelin champion.
The first time he does it, he hits Viserion and kills him. He does it twice more, and he misses both when Drogon is slower and closer.
Well, I don't know about Drogon being slower. Drogon's bigger.
No, he was slower because he wasn't flying at the... Like, he wasn't in flight at the time.
Fair.
Like, he was just sort of getting going. Mm. And yet, the second one, Daenerys just dodged.
Yeah.
Like,
There is kind of a point to be made of, like, once you know that the Night King's throwing shit at you, you're better off dodging it, because Viserion didn't even know that shit was possible.
Yeah, good point. Viserion was caught off guard.
Yeah, before that happens, the three dragons are just flying around going, yeah, burning whites, they can't touch your ass. Yeah. I will say with Rhaegal's death, I can think of just tiny little way, five more minutes of screen time, and I think it could have been a way better death for him, which instead of just having him die from an off-screen scorpion bolt, you could just say, hey, Daenerys, we need you to burn the Iron Fleet. You've got two dragons, and we need to get into Dragonstone. Can you take out the Iron Fleet? Have them fly in, do their thing. You've already established earlier that Rhaegal's been wounded from fighting Viserion.
Yep.
We can actually, and once again, the anime is a great job. Yes. You can see that in episode 4 when Rhaegal's flying around. He's got a giant tear through one of his wings. He's covered in scratches and scars from a dragon fight. And as he's flying away from Winterfell, you can see he's actually having trouble flying. You can see he's actually like slower than Drogon, and he's having to like flap harder to keep himself up. So you've established it. So you've established there he's wounded,
yep.
And he's having a tough time keeping up. So then you just throw him into the fight with the Iron Fleet, and have this moment where they're swooping down. They're like, "Yeah, Iron Fleet's fucked. What are they gonna do?" And then have them like pull canvas, like in season 7 when they whip out the Scorpion for the first time, and this like cart unveils to reveal this giant crossbow. Do the same thing but on the Iron Fleet, like have them whip the canvas off these scorpions and clack them out, and then have them take out Rhaegal.
Rather than sentry turret mode.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they are now.
I was thinking of it like an alternative for that scene as well. I was thinking of like if they could somehow, you know, still capture Melisandre and not kill the two dragons.
Miss Sunday.
Yeah. An alternative could have been, I feel like I would have liked this more with, if they did the final attack on King's Landing with both dragons and then Rhaegal was killed in that fight, I feel like Daenerys' actions at that point of going crazy might have been a bit better. A
bit more justified.
Just because she's just lost a child.
Yeah.
And she's in this fight. She's like, nope, you're burned now.
I'm more in the ballpark of having Rhaegal die before that just because it gives more time for that process to happen.
Yeah.
Just personally, so that way it's not like a, oh fuck, I just lost a kid. That way there's time for it to sink in and go, well, now I'm two dragons down just because I fucking came to Westeros and wasted time.
Can I just
say, if she'd gone straight to King's Landing, she would have crushed them.
Daenerys lost both dragons, her children basically, and her best friend, and she decided to burn down an entire city.
Yeah. Yep.
Drogon lost his two siblings and his mum, and all he did was burn a fucking chair. So
Drogon recognizes symbolism.
Drogon has very good anger management.
Yeah. Yeah, credit to Drogon. Drogon is level-headed.
Yeah, he did not kill the man right next to his dead mom. He just burnt a chair.
Which credit to Drogon, like, I totally get what they were going for with Drogon at the end there, where it's like, clearly the Iron Throne has done this.
I think they needed to emphasize that dragons were a lot smarter in order for that scene to be justified.
Well, they talk about how dragons are smart, and you can see a little bit in there.
They do talk
like
about how smart, but do they talk about how they're smart to emphasize the point that Drogon could realize that Daenerys died because of her greed to attain the Iron Throne?
I mean, regardless of whether they established that before, the argument is there and the point is there. You can see that happen.
Because a lot of the problem is a lot of people are seeing this as Daenerys died by something pointy. Thrawn has a lot of pointy stuff on it. I'm going to burn it.
That's a bit of a shallow look at it, though.
It is. Yeah. It is. And I just think they need to push a little bit harder that the Drogons are incredibly intelligent.
Yeah. And I like that they did destroy the Iron Throne.
Yes.
And they did the one way that I imagine it would be possible, which is to have Dragonfire melt it down. It
took a lot of Dragonfire.
Oh, yeah.
It took a lot to kill it.
Took a lot to make it. Like, that thing was forged by Beleriand, like, the biggest dragon that was.
Mm. That Drogon seemed to have unlimited fire, which is cool.
He's got a big flame sack.
I was going to say, he's got
fire. He's eaten beforehand.
Yeah. He had a big feast.
Yeah.
He had a bit of spicy food.
Yeah.
There was a lot available at King's Landing at the time.
Yeah. Lots to eat. Lots of char-grilled person. Char-grilled child.
The Golden Company were just sitting there. What else were they good for?
This is why they should have brought an elephant so he could eat them.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Just, like, have him eating an elephant at the start of this episode.
Jesus Christ.
Just munching down.
What good would elephants have done?
At least they kept the realism of getting elephants across the ocean.
I like that. I did like that.
I did like that. Yeah. Although someone did make a good point. I read on Reddit someone's theory about the elephants, which is that, like, their theory was, and I'm not sure I entirely agree with it, but it's a cool idea, is that Cersei saw Daenerys with dragons, which are this exotic magical creature, and she has nothing of the sort. So her thing was try and match that, like, try and match what this, like, foreign invader has with her own exotic, not like exotic magical animal, like this thing that Westeros has never even seen before, which is the elephant.
Mm.
So there's a point made for that.
I like to imagine it's more like how the Romans felt back then. It was like, elephants are dope. Let's just bring them to a fight.
Dude, Carthage has fucking elephants. Like, I can't remember who had that. Like, that would have been fucking sick. Too bad.
It could have ended like Lord of the Rings, the third movie.
Yeah, randomly exactly. Yeah, just a whole bunch of war elephants with palanquins full of Golden Company. Yeah. We've been sick.
I'd like to talk a minute about Arya for a minute because we haven't really spoken about her at all. Firstly, when she's found Daenerys during her speech and Jon's standing there beside her, how did she
fucking showed up
right next to Jon?
Hello.
When there's so many Unsullied looking at that.
How did,
like,
she sneak past all the White Walkers?
Yeah, how'd she sneak up on the Night King?
Natural gift.
Okay, so what we've learned is Arya can shadow walk and turn invisible for moments.
Yep.
Okay, that would have been awesome if she was learning that instead of the whole Faceless Men thing, because she didn't mention the faces at all in this season.
The closest I can think to that is when she's getting training from the Faceless Men, they do have a whole thing about moving undetected and being impossible to see. Yeah. But I always thought that was more about blending in with her surroundings. Like, the way they were showing that training montage, it looked more like, it not like, oh, sneak around and move undetected. It was more of like, if you can blend in and look so nonchalant in the world around you, people won't look your way. Like, no one's going to notice the peasant girl or the blind man, that kind of
stuff.
She did
end up stealing a face.
Yeah,
like, she has done it.
Yeah, she did it once before and it never came up again.
The writers came out and actually said, though, they did take away this power. They've said they wanted to take away this power because it seemed too powerful.
As opposed to dragons.
Yeah, but once again, there's an argument. Dragons are one thing to show up and just burn a nation down. But dragons can't be a focused, like, sniper round right into the queen's face of, like, and suddenly I'm your maester.
But that was the whole thing. Like, Arya had a list of people she wanted to kill. And then she had the ability to become an assassin.
Yep.
And she never really became an assassin to anything but the phrase.
How many people did Arya bump off her own list?
Herself? All I can think is Walder Frey.
Because there was the phrase, there was Meryn...
Meryn Trant.
Was it Meryn Trant? Who was the one she killed in Marine?
Meryn Trant.
Not Marine, in Braavos. Was it Meryn?
That was Meryn.
Okay.
The only person that didn't get killed on camera was Ilyn Payne.
Ilyn
because
Payne,
the character,
that's right.
The actor had cancer, I believe.
The actor was
so there. Very unfortunate.
I'm going to see if I can find Arya's list.
But yeah, all I can think of is Meryn Trant and Walder Frey, who I think Walder Frey ultimately was probably the most important one for her because it was brother and mother killed.
Yep.
He's also a bit of an asshole.
He was a horrible, horrible person.
Oh, Walder's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very satisfying death.
Here's my new wife. She is 15 now.
Yes.
Here we go. Walder Frey, Meryn Trant, Polyvar.
Polivar. You'll have to.
Yeah, no. I'm...
Oh, he was that's the one who killed. That's the one who killed Lommy.
Yep. Yep.
What the fuck's a Lommy?
The fuck's a Lommy?
The fuck's a Lommy?
Let's see. Oh,
I forgot about that.
Some of the Howard lines are just too funny.
Also on her list was Thoros of Myr.
Wait, what?
Yep.
Oh, for taking, for giving Gendry
yep,
to...
From being in the Brotherhood Without Banners.
Melisandre.
She took him off
Thoros
list,
dies from whites. Melisandre was on there.
Oh, I wouldn't have
because she's...
She...
Yeah, Melisandre was on there.
She knew her name?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, she was calling her the Red Witch.
Okay.
Cersei, yep. The Hound, yep. The Mountain, Tywin Lannister, Joffrey, Beric Dondarrion, Sir Ilyn Payne. Yep, so that's the list.
Okay, she could have waited it out and it happened for her.
Pretty much everyone on that list is dead.
Yeah, that's...
Like, the only one we didn't see on that list who died is Sir Ilyn, and that's it.
Yeah, and it's pretty everyone well established that if you didn't appear and you weren't like a good character, you're probably not alive.
Yeah. So the only ones who she did kill two like minor ones in the middle there, like when she was with the Hound, she took out Roj and what's his face.
I don't want to say Walder Frey is a minor character in the
sense
Walder that
Frey's,
he did have
Walder
one of
Frey
the
great... Walder Frey I'm not including in that list. Walder Frey came in afterwards. Yep. He's one of the big ones.
Yeah, because I was going to say, the Red Wedding being such a big event,
yep.
I don't think anyone could argue that was a minor character.
I was half expecting, speaking of the Walder Frey and the twins, I was half expecting Tyrion to offer Bronn the twins instead of Riverrun. Because his whole
twins,
thing,
yeah.
Like the whole thing, is the twins are two castles, not one.
Oh, okay. So,
his argument of I'll double it, just be like, oh, I'll give you the thing that divides the north from the south.
Yeah, but is the twins better than the Riverrun?
No, I don't think so. I think as far as castles go, Riverrun is nicer.
Yeah, Riverrun. We saw Riverrun, and it's not a bad castle.
Twins is a piece of shit, really.
Yeah,
yeah. The twins in the area it owns is a piece of shit. Yeah. It's like a shithole.
I mean, the Eyrie has a giant spire castle.
Oh, the Eyrie's dope.
Not gonna lie, it would have been awesome to see that crumble.
You know what it should have been done with the Eyrie? They should have rallied their forces to the Eyrie instead of Winterfell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been a much better...
Dude, that is the choke point.
It is the most defensible position in Westeros. Yes.
But the entirety of the North would have been eaten alive. They already struggled to get that many people to Winterfell. Imagine, how many people would have been killed along the way.
Also, the fact that the Eyrie's, kind of... It's further south and then, to the east of Westeros. Like,
also,
it's kind of out...
ignored
it's,
it. And
yeah, exactly. The White
Walkers
could have just walked right past.
Would that have been a problem?
I mean, then the Army of the Dead's just getting bigger.
Also, we have to argue the Eyrie isn't probably that big. Try and get all the North over there.
That's true. It's also not the largest castle.
No.
Yeah, the Vale
just
is
a giant spire.
The Vale is also very mountainous terrain though. So it is, once again, that's the whole point. It is nigh impossible to siege.
Is that where who were those people that Tyrion helped in season? Helped them with the battle. Are they the mountain?
Oh, those mountain folk.
Yeah, the mountain tribes in the Eyrie.
The mountain tribes. Nothing eventuated with them.
I think
not that they were important,
off.
But.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure
they all died in that battle, immediately.
Oh, okay, yep.
Far as I'm aware, I don't think they ever
came
back.
Oh, they were the Vanguard.
Yeah, exactly. Tyrion deployed with them, got knocked out, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, Tywin, very well planned there.
Yeah, well, you don't send your own force. Yeah. That's the whole thing. Like, you don't send your own forces if you can help it. You put the garrison, guys you have a debt to pay.
Example, the Dothraki.
Yeah, exactly. Put the Dothraki up first, and it's like, guys, when we conquer Westeros, what do we do with the Dothraki? What are we going to do about it? Nah, fuck it. Just send them against the Army of the Dead. Kill them off.
So what do the Dothraki do now?
They just hang out in King's Landing last I looked.
They were walking on the... There was two guys just walking around with their swords smiling while Jon Snow walked past them.
I am your new neighbor.
What?
Don't mind as I kill your wife.
So Dothraki, from what I'm aware, there's two different ways they work. The Blood Riders are ride or die.
Yep.
They roll with their Carl until the Carl is dead, and then they continue rolling with the Carl. Everyone else tends to go might is right.
And they would have just followed the next leader.
Yeah, Dothraki are pretty much a situation of if your Carl dies, you then go to the next strongest champion. So you follow someone else into whatever they're doing.
Bran.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Apparently. He's got an army of blood riders to serve him now.
Man,
yeah.
Look at this crippled boy.
Yeah.
Bran the strongest. Bran the broken. Can we pick a different name? No.
Dude, Bran's sitting there in that meeting is it too late to change the name?
No.
Bran the wheelie legs no feely. We'll workshop it.
Bran the busted up.
Yeah, Bran the busted.
Bran the penis no worky.
Why can't we do Bran the Brave or
Bran the
Bold?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, exactly. Anything. Yeah. Just why? I mean, I get
Bran the Night King's nemesis. No, nothing.
Bran the Towerfall survivor.
Yeah, Bran the badass. Like anything. No.
Bran the Stark.
Bran. Well, I mean, yeah, Broken works into the Builder though pretty well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, after his namesake.
Yeah.
I just like
it.
How...
It also, I think. Going with the Broken isn't a bad idea just for the like sake of like Westeros itself.
No, I just feel horrible being called the Broken.
Oh, I'd hate to have everyone just be like, as they walk into a room, "Oh, hail Bran the Broken." Can we please not, guys? You can just call, you want first name basis, guys. Let's just call me Bran.
If you have to name me, please name me after my physical and emotional problems.
Yeah, exactly. Please name me after all my pains and problems in the past 7 years.
They're
Thank
not gonna
you.
Call him King Bran Stark. No, nothing. Okay.
Also, I think there's an argument to be made to keep him away from being called Bran Stark.
Why? Yeah.
Because you want to take away the power of, like, if you're talking about the power of names, calling him Bran Stark means that you're putting a Stark on the throne.
Okay.
And having a Stark on the throne means you've got the lords in the north are the Starks, and now the king of the Six Kingdoms is a Stark.
Okay, so
do you really want to put that? Yeah, it's about taking away. I think it's about taking away part of the dynastic power.
All right, yeah, that makes a bit more sense.
It's the same reason why I don't think anyone would have said, "Hey, let's put Aegon Targaryen on the throne," because Targaryens have been on the throne for nearly 300 years and it's not worked out well so far.
I also think no one said that because they were worried that Grey Worm would just immediately kill them.
Dude, you know what would be really freaking funny? If he's just like, "No, I'm not giving Jon Snow back, he's our prisoner," and they just said, "What about if we put Aegon Targaryen on the throne?"
That's what I was
and he's
expecting.
Like, "Oh, you know, you guys have a Targaryen," and they're like, "He's in your dungeon right now."
Is it weird that I was expecting them to go like, "Oh yeah, Jon Snow will be our king," and then Grey Worm will be like, "Oh shit, now what?"
I was half expecting them to say what, like, or Tyrion to go, "What about Aegon?" Like when he said stories, I had two thoughts in my mind. I was like, he's either gonna throw out Bran, the teller of stories, or he's gonna say, "You know who has a great story? A young bastard boy who actually this entire time was the most noble of us all."
So Varys informing everyone that Jon Snow's real name was Aegon Targaryen and he was the rightful ruler of the Iron Throne had no impact.
He didn't actually get the letters out, I thought.
It was like there were days in between when you first see him writing and...
Yeah.
So there was really no point.
The whole point, really, as far as the context of the show was to, yeah, just push Daenerys to going, "Competition? What?"
Okay.
It was just to put pressure on her, I feel like, in the context of the show, at least.
Going back to what you said, Carl, we're talking about like the Targaryens' rule being all that bad and all that.
Mm.
The thing is, back in like Game of Thrones history and all that, it wasn't all bad. Like the Mad King was the bad part.
Yeah.
And that was bad. But before that, it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
Like they ran the kingdoms for hundreds of years pretty well.
I mean, you still had like... So Aegon the Conqueror shows up with three dragons and burninates everyone says, "Hey, y'all my subjects now.
That's called conquering.
I'm gonna make my..." Exactly. He came over and conquered.
But after
and
that,
then after him,
years.
But then you had the Dance of Dragons where the Targaryens where the Targaryens fractured and split, and you had a division between their own house, which formed into a civil war. Then you had the Blackfyre Rebellion.
Fine.
So there is an argument made of like the Targaryens haven't had a clean run the entire time. They've been fighting themselves just as long as anyone's been fighting them.
Yeah. I get a feeling that Game of Thrones prequels would have to have a higher budget because there's even more dragons.
Well, we're getting pretty close to the end of the episode, so why don't we talk about like what we think will be the spin-off series? Because they've announced that they want to do them. What do we want to see and what do we think will happen?
I wouldn't be against some Rhaegar Targaryen stuff, but I get the feeling that might be a little bit too close to the storyline, mm-hmm. and they might want to go a little bit further back to before the Mad King's rule.
Okay.
Or they could do some... The direct spin-off, which will be Arya going off. But I think a lot of people would have been like, "Well, we had 8 seasons of Arya Stark.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't want that." And I can understand people not wanting anything that involves the same characters their current actors.
I also wouldn't want... I kind of don't want to see what's next in Westeros. Like, I don't want to see... Like, I want this... Sure enough, I mightn't be ultimately, like... You know, I mightn't have... Yeah, pretty much I just don't want to see, like, all these characters who've just gotten their send-offs and endings to then go, And then, like, this, I don't want the Star Wars thing to happen, where they're like, and then they don't live happily ever after.
A spinoff shouldn't be a direct sequel.
No, it shouldn't.
It shouldn't. So,
like,
I want to see
the rest of Arya's story, because that's, you know, let her go off and explore the great mystery that is the West.
Yeah. It's not like there's going to be a Jon Snow spinoff where he's exploring north of the Wall. There's not going to be.
He's just living, drinking, fucking.
He's going to find the Queen of the Forest. Children of the Forest, and they're going to make him a white.
They're going to turn him into the next Night King.
I want a good old history lesson here. Just give me, like, you know, Aegon the Conqueror taking over. That would be awesome. Give me a history lesson.
That could be a good movie.
I totally agree with you, Jackson. The things I want the most are from the history of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
I want to see old Valyria. I want to see the doom of Valyria. What happened there. I want to see Aegon the Conqueror. And the thing I want to see the most is Robert's Rebellion.
Yeah.
I would, like, sure enough, it's this great thing that happened like 20 years ago off screen, but I want to see, like, the slow build up to it, where I want to see the Mad King. I want to see Rhaegar Targaryen and this, like, this glorious ruby boy showing up and being like the best future king, and then having the great tragedy of him being murdered on
Prince
the Battle
Charming,
of the Trident.
Kill the Mad King.
Yeah. I want to see all that. I want, like, how great would it be to have, like, let's say 2 seasons of this build up of, like, all right, you've got, like, this, you know, like, all these political threads of, like, the Baratheons and the Targaryens. And then, like, second to last episode, we have Robert Baratheon murder Rhaegar Targaryen, like, kill him dead in the Battle of the Trident. And it's like, oh, fuck, we really like that guy. And there's this brutal combat where he's just killed in a river. And then the final episode have Jaime Lannister just murder the Mad King and have the Red Keep overthrown.
And then I can't wait for jokes about how it's like, oh man, I really like that that Ned guy. I can't wait till they make a story about him.
Oh man, I can't wait for his future part.
Well, with all those prequel ones that are based on the history of whatnot,
yep.
Would you, if they do say, oh, we're doing one based on Robert's Rebellion, would you rather them just go, okay, we're doing that, it's going to be one season, here's 12 episodes, or... we're going to be doing a 3-season thing. Like,
if they had,
how would you like them to set it out?
I just want them to have a plan for it beforehand. Like, I just want them to say it's going to be this many episodes long, and that's how many episodes long it is. And I want it to be an appropriate amount of time.
Because that's a little problem I think I had with this, with Game of Thrones. I think they, and George R. R. Martin's come out and said he would have liked an extra season.
You could have done up to 10 full-length seasons.
I think they would have had to do another season, or at least extend this season by a few more episodes just to get a bit more of their messages across.
Yeah, I think seasons 7 and 8 were definitely more sped up.
Yeah.
Whereas, like...
it took people, like, you know, there's seemingly an hour to get from King's Landing to Winterfell.
Well, not even. Like, there's an entire season. Like... all of season 2 is spent on the King's Road, going from the south to the north.
Yeah.
Like, going from King's Landing to just into what is considered to be the north. That's it. That's a whole season.
I really don't know why the writers decided they didn't want to do more. It's a very successful show. It's been, like, HBO was offering all this money to it. I don't know why they didn't.
You almost think they
going.
Wrote a script and were like, oh, we don't know what else to write.
Yeah, they,
like,
kind of just gave up.
I almost get the feeling they didn't know. They didn't get enough guidance from George R. R. Martin.
Oh, George washed his hands of the show after season 4. I know. He was like, I don't want to do this.
In all fairness, I don't even think George R. R. Martin could give them what they would be looking for, because the books and the TV show are so different and have gone beyond. Well, sure enough, he can give them the outline, the main points, but they're missing a lot of characters along the way.
They might have been
a lot,
like,
of storylines along the way. They don't have a whole bunch of plot lines. Like, there's no Victarion Greyjoy. They're missing a lot of Greyjoy members. There's no Lady Stoneheart.
Yep.
Everyone mentions that character whenever the argument of, you know, the differences. Everyone
well, the
mentions
first
Lady
big
Stoneheart.
One, though.
Because it's such a huge change.
But I'm just saying,
everyone mentions
that one.
Yeah, like, in the show, you've got Beric Dondarrion rolling around. Mm. When he died in order to make Catelyn Stark come back to life as a Fire White.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, this is weird.
She's some, like, Spirit of Vengeance shit running around because Beric Dondarrion's a corpse now.
Okay. That would have been awesome.
Yeah. So I have a feeling, like, I'll probably rewatch the show in time, and then I might listen to the books on the old audiobooks.
I was talking to my dad last night, and he goes, I have no idea what I'm going to do now, because he rewatches that show constantly. It's all he does. Like, he lies down on the couch and watches Game of Thrones. It's all done now. He's like, oh, I got nothing to do now.
Can you see?
Yeah, now that Game of Thrones is gone, I've been watching this show for what, 6 years now? Like, I think I started watching Game of Thrones when season 3, episode 9 came out. And people started like going, holy shit, this show. And I was like, well, I guess I have to start now. It was the Red Wedding. I remember like someone throwing out like a line about the Red Wedding. And I was like, well, now I got to see what this is about. Yeah.
It was about then too. When I started, I'm like, oh, oh my God.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be, like, you've got people who started watching after, let's say, the Red Wedding, like yourselves. Mm. People that got in after Jon Snow's death.
Yep.
Stuff like that. I don't see as many people starting from the start who have never seen it now than there were beforehand. I don't see as many people going like, oh, now that every episode's out, I'm going to binge it.
You think we've hit peak watches of Game of Thrones?
I think so. I think we... Fair. I just get the feeling that a lot of people, after hearing some of backlash from the last few seasons, and it's very difficult to avoid spoilers. I almost feel like if you knew the outcome of the show, because it was very heavily about who would rule Westeros,
yeah,
a lot of people would be like, why would I watch it now that I know the exact outcome? Why would I know that I already know that the boy that gets pushed out of the tower at the end of the first episode ends up becoming king? A lot of people would be like, I know what's going to happen now.
But there is a case made of it is about the journey.
I know, because it is about the journey.
So, like, the ending is a smallest microcosm of the show.
Yeah, and like, I think that, the journey was the best part of the show.
Exactly.
But it's hard to convince a lot of people of that.
Yeah,
it's a big show to watch now. If you want to start from the start, that like you've got to be dedicated now. I feel like it's 80 hours. Far. Yeah.
It's a lot of shows.
You have to pay attention as well. So it's not like you can kind of just like kind of watch in the
My
background.
My parents have managed to get through a lot of it without paying attention. You'd be shocked.
Oh, yeah.
Who's this character?
So who's this person? Mum, they're in last episode.
Yeah. Like, I just told you.
Yeah.
Then you got my parents who were sitting on the back decking as the season was starting, and they were watching theory videos together. I'm like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Those people you are dedicated.
Yeah. Like, you nerds.
Yeah, oh, all about my alt shift X, just being like, oh, who is Quaithe?
Guess who my mum was watching?
Yeah, alt shift X. He had some really good videos.
He did.
Yeah.
I tried to avoid theory videos before the season came out and after every episode. I think there was almost too much to the point where I'm like, I stopped watching myself.
I stopped watching them right around season 7 started because at that point I was like, nah, I'm not getting much out of this. Like, there is a lot of their theories I could tell. Were cool, like they're cool in the books, but I knew they would never pan out in the show.
Tell me someone who would have predicted Arya killed the Night King.
Honestly, I feel like there's a theory for everything.
Oh look,
like
of course.
I feel like every outcome that could have happened this season, I've probably read.
Yeah,
just go and throw that out there. My dad did say Arya's gonna kill the Night King really all the season, and I said, nah, that can't happen. And then it happened. I was watching it during the day, and my first reaction to Arya kill the Night King was like, fuck, he was right. He's not going to let this go.
Damn. How'd he come up with that?
It was literally just like, oh, she's been training to like assassinate things. Of course he's going to get her. And that was his whole logic. Okay. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, good logic. I get it. But nah. And then it was right. I was
like, then totally came out right, yeah. Yeah.
What people don't know is that Jackson's dad is actually one of the writers.
Oh, that explains the bad writing.
Yeah.
Before the season started, like the week before the season started, I had myself, Jared, and my parents fill out these sheets I found on a Google Doc that were I'll have to dig these up. They were, who do you think is going to live, die, and become a white? On like this big table, it was a checkbox. It was like a form to fill out of who will win Clegane Bowl, the Mountain or the Hound, who will end up on the Iron Throne by the end of the show, and then like these checkboxes of is Cersei pregnant, yes or no, is Daenerys pregnant, yes or no, will Winterfell be destroyed, yes or no, will King's Landing be destroyed, yes or no. Also, there were questions of who is Azor Ahai and who is the Night King really.
Both
those two
unanswered.
Didn't pan out at all.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I had everyone fill them out to see how well people would guess the show. And let me tell you, people were really wrong.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I did fantastic on who I thought would live and die.
Yeah.
I got so many of that right. Everything else I was terrible at. All the like prophecy stuff, because I think I gave maybe a little bit too much faith into certain things. And like my predictions were
You're pretty odd. Like you didn't get... Jared got the like a whole bunch of stuff on the who lives and who dies.
I did very
but
well.
But everything else he was wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I was the only person of those four who didn't say Daenerys would be on the Iron Throne at the end of the show. I put nobody, so I got points for that.
Yeah.
Everyone else said Daenerys. Everyone else thought Daenerys was pregnant, which I thought was a weird choice for everyone, because I thought that was completely undone. Yeah, no, that didn't happen at all. But for some reason, there was like one line that everyone else was hanging off going, but this is proof. And I was like, there's no proof.
Never once said there's proof. I was always like, they're just going to try to throw in as many twists as possible. That was my worry.
You were right with that one, at least.
Yeah. I was worried that they were just going to throw in as many twists as possible, but ultimately the outcome would still be the same, which is why I put Daenerys on the throne, but that she was pregnant and Cersei was lying about being pregnant.
She was pregnant and Jon just stabbed her anyway.
Yeah, I was right all along.
Shiv her right in the baby like at the Red Wedding.
Oh, I still feel bad.
I don't want to hear that line. Shiv her right in the baby. Oh, no.
That's what happened at the Red Wedding, man. They went right for the kid. But they're like, oh, Robb Stark's heir. Get her.
Oh, it's so bad.
Jared was also wrong on the King's Landing and Winterfell being destroyed. You had them flipped around.
Yeah, look.
I had both being destroyed.
Because, I mean, I kind of thought when you were like, oh, they'll be destroyed, I thought you meant like, you know, the battlements would have fallen, not like they lost the siege. But
King's Landing was destroyed.
King's Landing lost the siege
that.
And was absolutely destroyed. So I would agree with that. But then I looked at Winterfell and I was like, Winterfell didn't look too good. But then because apparently the builders there are better at construction than the Victorian government, they rebuilt Winterfell so quickly. The builders on this show should be given some sort of award. Like, they can rebuild very quick.
Can we get them for Reservoir Station?
Oh, that'd be fantastic. That'd be lovely. Hey, get Reservoir Station built in 2 days.
If that's the kind of carpentry work that Winterfell can do, what do you think Bran the Builder could pull out of his ass?
Yeah, exactly.
He built the wall by himself.
Yeah. Oh, he just built the Red Keep in a day.
Yeah. All right, guys, I think unless anyone has any closing thoughts that they want to check out,
Bran should warg into Drogon.
Dude,
just want to say that.
You know what would have been a great finale to the show? If they had Bran will be a great, like, they had that finale montage, and they just had, like, text on screen saying, Bran was the most evil tyrant of them all.
Oh, God.
Like, just...
Yeah, could you imagine?
Bran couldn't have children of his own, but that didn't stop him from trying with every woman in the Six Kingdoms.
Oh, no.
No. Just hips bumping.
Bran would later go on to warg into Drogon and burn down the infidels that were the North. Like, what a shocking twist that would have been if he was like, ah, you're declaring independence. My first act as king is to reclaim the North.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would have been bloody horrible.
My final thought is, let's see how they do with Star Wars.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh,
we'll be sure to be doing an episode. Yep.
Wait,
they've got a trilogy.
They've
got a trilogy.
As in trilogy 10, 11, 12, or just a spin-off trilogy? Solo trilogy?
We don't know because they've handed out like three trilogies right now. So Rian Johnson has a trilogy.
Which I...
Yeah, I know. The strangest showrunners.
I liked Last Jedi.
I didn't hate Last Jedi. But they could have done a lot better.
So you're neutral. I didn't like it, and you liked it. All right, we've got the whole range of Last Jedi.
We'll be back for whatever he writes next.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever the next Star Wars story is, you can tell we'll be covering it on Mike's Camera Action.
Yep.
And on that note, we'll see you all next time.
Bye-bye.
See ya.